This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Karen Terrell. She's Vice President of SAS Federal, and we're going to talk about a wide range of topics, including analytics and the change in the federal government. And many of my listeners are just bombarded with information. It's as if you have a desk that has 3 feet stacks of paper on top and trying to figure out what to do with it. But before we begin, Karen, perhaps you can tell us about your background, how you wound up with this organization, and how you can help our federal listeners.
Good morning, John. Thank you very much for having me here. I have been working in the federal sector my entire career and in enterprise software for most of it. Been at SAS for the last 9 years. I'm really happy to be leading a large team serving the federal government. We focus on the civilian market, the DoD, the intel community, as well as health and healthcare.
Now, SAS has been around since early, I think, the mid-70s. That's back when I was in grade school, by the way. And they've garnered a very, very strong reputation among so many organizations. In fact, if you look at the list of I was at your website this morning, SAS.com, and there's companies that you look like you compete with, as look like you partner with. I mean, your tentacles just in all kinds of different areas, in the federal government, in finance, in security. It seems to be, can you turn around and not find SAS somewhere in the federal government? It's everywhere.
Well, we hope not. It turns out that our strengths in the commercial sector and retail manufacturing, as well as the financial services and health and life sciences, have direct correlations. They actually mirror some of the mission-critical issues that our government is facing. So we do have 37 years of amazing success and applying analytics and data quality and data management to big data. And we can do that in the federal government just like we have in the commercial sector.
I have a nephew in North Carolina, and talk about big data. He's a big guy. He's 6'7". And in North Carolina, they know, you know, a good place to work. By the way, Uncle John, you know, if I could get a work, that's a great place to work because they're smart, and they care about their people, and they're growing, and they're talking about the kids. And apparently in North Carolina, this is the place to go. I mean, this is a great place to work, huh?
It certainly is. The Fortune magazine has recognized it as one of the best companies to work for in America for as long as they've been running the list. And as an employee, I've been here, as I said, 9 years next month, and I can testify to it being an amazing company where customers come first, but employees are always in the mind and the hearts of management and innovation in the company. It's great to be there.
I work for a very, very small company, only 20 people. But when people are considering doing business with us, they want to know about our history, and they want to know about who's working with. They want to get a comfort level of who do you trust with important decisions. And if you look at your company, it's like, do I want to trust a company that's been around since 75 and has lots of happy employees? I want happy employees. I don't want people who are leaving every 2 weeks. You've seen that.
Yep. Yeah, well, we certainly have. I mean, we have low turnover rates. And one of the other amazing things about the company is that we have a subscription model for our technology. So our customers have to pay every year to continue using it, except in the federal government. And we have an enormous amount of people come back and renew their technology because they're really happy with the innovation and with the care that they get from the employees who are happy. Dr. Goodnight's philosophy is that if I have really happy employees who are fulfilled and have flexible hours and the ability to run their lives in conjunction with their jobs, then they're going to make their customers happy. Customers are going to keep coming back, and it's a great cycle.
So if you do some analysis of your company, you find out that about 35-36% of advanced analytics market, Forrester's using some fancy words, talks about big data predictive analytics solutions. I mean, that's impressive. And you work in the area of predictive analytics, and I think that's very, very difficult. I think collecting the data, It's difficult, and I think assessing the data is there. And then the other end of the funnel, I think, is analyzing it. That's really, you have to put on your thinking cap. That's really the key. I mean, you could have as much, as we talked about, 3-foot stack of pile of paper in front of you, but if you can't pull out 2 or 3 points, why have it?
Well, that's just it. And that's the whole point of big data. Everyone will tell you that big data in itself is not only not new, certainly not for the federal government that's been collecting data and huge amounts of it for many, many years. But the real issue is, how do we get to it? How do we make sure that it's correct or clean, as they say? And then how do I apply it to my problem or my mission critical need? And that's where things like advanced analytics come into play.
When I was at your website this morning, I was reading some blogs, and one blog was talking about, you know, how analytics has changed in the last 5 years. I mean, I've been doing this radio show in 6 years, and just 6 years ago, I'm sure the questions I would have presented to you, I'd have to shred those and come up with new ones. I mean, if you look at what's going on in the world today, I mean, things are just, everything is changing so quickly. You know, it used to be that you would collect large amounts of data, you can call it big data or not, and you'd probably evaluate what happened last year. Well, last year we got our sales from North Dakota. Today, the people in the federal government want to know, okay, so what, Karen? We know what happened. Like, what's going to happen? How do you tell me? Okay, so where's the next storm going to be? Or where do we have to deploy resources to respond to the next storm?
Right. Well, that's exactly right. And that's the key to everything. In the early 2000s, I was working for an enterprise reporting company. What we called back then is business intelligence. And day after day after day, we would thrill our customers just with the ability to surface the data. All I wanted to do was see it. Let me see the data.
That's
I just
it, yeah.
want a report. And so we were, you know, that market grew 30% year over year, and it was really exciting. But what we were really doing was looking in the rearview mirror. We were being able to put pretty colors and charts and graphs or make a dashboard, all talking about the past. And now we're able to actually apply predictive modeling and forecasting to that data, so that instead of saying this is what happened and here's what we learned from it and applying your experience and your intuition to that to make decisions, now you can actually use advanced analytical algorithms to figure out, well, what's the best possible outcome of this data? What's likely to happen? What's the best case scenario? And that's amazing power.
And if you're working for an agency, and you're getting your arm twisted to say, you have to be more efficient, you have to improve quality, you have to deploy resources more efficiently. Well, if you deploy your resources in an inefficient manner and the storm hits in New Orleans and all your resources are in North Dakota, well, you know, there's going to be a problem there. And so this actually boils down to, guess what, to reducing the expense of the federal government in helping people with a wide, I mean, wide variety of applications. I mean, everything from finance to geography to weather to weather patterns. I mean, it's just it does. You know, predictive analytics sounds like, you know, some PhD in an ivory tower somewhere. No, it saves people money. That's it. That's your motto should be. We don't do predict. We just save people money.
That's exactly right. And we like to think that we also stop laws from being broken, and we stop fraudsters, and we stop crimes of violence and all kinds of other things with this predictive modeling and being able to figure out where should we be for that storm, and how do we prepare the assets that we have for our aid organizations here and abroad. It does save money. You're right about that.
Fraudsters sounds like a rock and roll group that A.J. Gunther would be in, doesn't it? The Fraudsters. I have a LinkedIn group called Big Dog Data.
Do you sing?
No, I don't sing. But I have a LinkedIn group called Big Dog Data, and we talk about, guess what, big data.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always throw in little articles. I threw an article on there last week, and Forbes came out with a study, and it said by 2017, 87% of all devices connected to the internet will be smartphones or tablets. And I thought 87 was a little high. Maybe I'm going to be wrong. Is 87 going to be low? So just think about that. Okay, so 5 years ago, we're trying to look backwards in history, and now we're maybe trying to get in. It's all going to change. The amount of data is going to come in, decision points are going to change, and people want to know more and more quickly what is going. Not only is it going to be mobile and more of them, but they, no, don't tell me tomorrow. What's going on now?
Well, that's what we refer to as real-time decision-making, you know, and that's how, that's in the business world. But you're right about the mobile devices and all kinds of other social media that's out there that's collecting. And one of the key factors to consider is that back in the early 2000s, you know, it was really a long time ago in terms of technology, we really needed to be able to have the data in pretty tables, you know, relational databases or ways that we could funnel it into a system to do analytics on it. And today, one of the SAS strengths is really dealing with unstructured data, which is growing at an astounding rate, in large part because of social media. And being able to get at that unstructured data and actually use it for the good is really, really critical to success. And I have some examples of that.
And if you look at the origins of SAS, you find out that the statistical analysis that was done in the mid-70s actually was with structured data.
Yes.
And they used computer cards, and they would stack these cards up and run it through, and they had a lot of insight and wasn't done before. So they're staying on top of things by now working with unstructured data, which is the point behind tablet devices and all kinds of different input devices now.
Right. You think about that and you think about our daily lives, but think about something like the Department of Defense. We worked with an organization that has aircraft. They all do, so I'm not giving anything away. And they would try to analyze their maintenance records. So a plane would have some downtime for a certain period of time, and they would take a look at these forms that the maintenance technicians would fill out, and they could funnel them into a system, and all the boxes that were checked and everything really was not leading to any knowledge about what was happening with this particular aircraft and why it was experiencing such downtime. We were able to actually use the describe problem box of text and find the silver bullet, fix the problem.
Describe problem. That story of my life. Describe the problem here and be a 40-page answer for that. We're going to have to take a break, talk more about predictive analytics and really what it means to our listeners. We are speaking with Karen Terrell. She is the Vice President of SAS Federal. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Karen Terrell. She's Vice President of SAS Federal. Talking about a big fancy term called predictive analytics solutions. And what this really means is it takes the data that you have, the data you're collecting, and tries to make it practical. I guess it's like, in engineering, they have practical engineering or structured engineering, I think, is rather than theoretical engineering. So we're talking about a lot of different practical applications today. Give us an example of some of the agencies you've worked with and helped them with different types of problems.
Well, one of the strongest areas that we're doing a lot of work in is fraud detection. And fraud is probably the nefarious term for what is commonly referred to as improper payments inside the federal government, you know, which is any kind of wrong payment. But we're really looking for the fraudsters, the people that are looking to work together in collusion to perhaps create a fraud ring and siphon millions and millions of dollars. We have a technology called social network analysis, which you always see the cop shows where the cops are got the big whiteboards and they're putting post-its all over it and they're trying to put the pieces together because, in fact, they only have pieces of the story. And this technology allows you to put all the pieces together and actually surface to you physical and actual rings of people that are connected, how they're connected, and give you a different visual for how these fraudsters might be perpetrating their crimes.
You know, I think your experience in the commercial world with banks can help you in risk-based decision on people who use or not use your product. I mean, there's outliers there, and I think if you just look at some counties in Florida, you'll find a disproportionate number of organizations there that may not fit the profile of a respectable institution. But that's what it's all about. If you can get into the, for example, I think your company's in 400 of the Fortune 500 organizations, and many of those are banks, and they have lots of analytics and trying to figure out who the frauds are. And if you can take that information and apply it to the federal government, well, why not?
No, that's exactly right. And the financial sector is our largest sector at SAS. Federal, or rather government, is the second largest globally. Three out of the four largest banks use SAS technology for credit card fraud. So when you scan your credit card at the Harris Teeter or the grocery store that you're going to on Saturday morning, that's spotting its way right down to SAS headquarters in Cary, North Carolina, and coming back to you at your point of sale in your grocery store to say whether or not you're approved for that purchase. That same technology can be used for real-time decision-making for grants and loans and all kinds of payments, for instance, from Social Security or the IRS.
And I think that's the whole idea behind analytics. If it was a challenge with business intelligence or BI to find out what happened last year, well, suppose you look back at last year and you say, oh, that John Gilroy, he scammed us for $1 million. Well, if you can have tools that allow you to see what's going on today, all of a sudden you can reach out and have John Gilroy thrown in the hoosegow. I mean, it just saves money right in there because you don't have to look at the past. You can say, well, he's doing it right now. And maybe, I guess, ideally is, well, his profile, he's probably, oh, he's supplying wheelchairs in Florida. Well,
yes.
Isn't that interesting? Let's take a look at, is he an accredited vendor? Oh, no. Well, why not? And look at distribution. So it's the transition from past, present to the future. It's just, you can save much more money if you can project what's going to happen down the road.
That's right. And really, what you hit on was that you can project the the future unless you have the past. And the federal government is ripe with all of this data. Some of it we talked earlier is what's referred to as dark data, that it's not being used. It's sitting out there. It's archived. And if we could access that and use that, we can detect anomalies. We can find clusters. We can do geolocation. We can, you know, overlay this data on a map to take a look at where there might be hotspots for this kind of fraud, say, perhaps in Florida.
Hotspots, exact terminology used in the medical world for those types of activities. When I look at the history of your company, I think of real smart PhDs working at a college in North Carolina, doing statistics. And back then, doing statistics was very challenging. And so what you do is you'd play out the stuff called Green Bar. And so you'd always see these smart guys walking down the hall with this thing Green Bar on them, and they'd sit there for hours, and they'd pore over the numbers, and you know, they would generate conclusions based on that. Well, ain't gonna happen today, is it? People want visual information and graphical information, and they're not going to sit with the Green Bar stack and spend 3 hours on it. They want to infect something on a handheld device or their notebook that's going to help them graphically understand what's going on.
Oh, so true. And I just want to sort of back up to something you said, this statistics was really hard back then. It still is for some of us. The beauty of the technology today is that it's really democratizing analytics for people that are knowledge workers. So you know your enterprise, you know your agency, you probably even know the data that you need to access and understand and use to make better decisions. Today's technologies allow you not only to visualize it with a technology like SAS Visual Analytics that allows you to import millions of rows of data in seconds and look at it. So if everybody is always talking about big data, how would you like to see your big data? We can help you see your big data. And that might actually guide the questions that you need to have answered as opposed to knowing it in advance.
I've got another fun fact for you. I am full of fun facts this morning. Here's another study. I'm talking about 2017 for some reason. I read this study this morning, and it said that by 2017, most Americans will have 7 devices that connect to the internet. I mean, wow. And I said, well, that can't be true. But I was thinking, I was having breakfast with my wife this morning, and I had a notebook, and she had 3 devices on, and I had 1. And that doesn't even include my kids and the other stuff that's sitting on shelves. So just active this morning in my little house, there was 4 devices. But look at that, 7. That may be true. And what's that? It's all generating more information, more trends. And it's you have to understand it somehow.
That's right. And that's where SAS and its rich history in statistical analytics and predictive modeling is so critical here, because there are other organizations who can provide business intelligence or even data management and data quality. It's the predictive layer on top that helps you actually use all of that data with the incoming data simultaneously that can help you make the right decision at the right time. And we're talking about everything like we've spoken about, the fraudsters, but we're also talking about, for instance, a project we're working on with the National Collaborative for Biopreparedness. Maybe the next flu epidemic. How'd you like to miss that?
I'd like to miss it. you can participate in it. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Exactly. So we study emergency medical services and poison control and emergency room data, and we're able to actually sometimes months in advance predict where there might be a next outbreak of a flu epidemic or H1N1 virus.
I don't want to confess to being trendy, but I had the folks from Cloudera on about 2 years ago talking about Hadoop and big data. And you know, I mean, it's a trendy word, and it was interested in it, and it gets hits for your website, and so I like using big data. But, I mean, the question is, I mean, so where do you fit in with big data? Do you compete with big data? Do you work with big data? Do they use your tools? Do you use their tools? Or where does SAS fit in with big data and these trending vendors?
Well, we think of ourselves as big data, because as we said earlier, it's not so much about whether it's there or not. We know that. It's really about getting to it and making use of it. And that's where SAS shines its brightest, is being able to analyze it for good. And like you said earlier, to save money.
So there's terms. Now, the trending term from 5 years ago was data mining. And now the trending term is cloud. And I don't know what's trending. Predictive analytics has always kind of been there in the background lurking, because it's always known that there's this data mining out there. We got to pull information from the data warehouses, pull information from that. Now it's in the cloud. Now it's, you know, it's Hadoop. It's the elephant type. Is it all statistical, or is there, I guess, qualitative parts of this as well?
Well, definitely qualitative parts. And, you know, our social media analytics takes a look at things like sentiment. in analysis. And so, you know, somebody might say there's a bomb, or somebody might say she's the bomb. Completely different things. And then you have languages that you have to manage around. And so social media analytics takes a look at not just the volume of data, but the quality and the meaning of the data to help make decisions better.
Just last week, Google had an update called Hummingbird, and that's what they're trying to do, too. They're trying to make their search results apply more to normal terms that people would use, like that term, the bomb. I don't even know if that's a popular phrase. Maybe that was 6 months popular, and now it's not. There's a different phrase used all the time. But I think that's from my experience with analytics is you know, I would give a lot of respect to the quantitative folks, the smart folks that, you know, can read the green bar. But you have to sit, and it's like constructing a survey. It has to be done in a very careful fashion, and it can't be arbitrary. And there has to be maybe a wider mindset used before you start asking some questions.
Right. Well, two things to say about that. One is that, as I said earlier, this democratization of the analytics, it really brings the technology and the power of analytics to the knowledge worker. So you've got so many hundreds of thousands of dedicated civil servants and military who know their domain. They know their enterprise. They know their mission. And they need access to the data so that they can manipulate it and slice it and dice it. And so the technology today, like SAS Visual Analytics, as I said earlier, allows you to throw in all the data. You might not even know what you're looking for yet. You may instead have a mandate from Congress that you need to report on. It doesn't matter. You can get to the data, you can slice it, you can dice it, and you can get down to the nub of it.
Slicing and dicing. No, this isn't a cooking show. This is Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy and Federal News Radio. Take a break. Come back with Karen Terrell, Vice President of Federal with SAS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Karen Terrell. She's the Vice President of Federal with SAS. We're talking about analytics. And SAS is in many, many different areas. SAS is also involved in social media analytics. Tell us about your experiences in that and what values that have for our federal listeners, please.
Well, in truth, this is another place where our success in the commercial sector, say in retail, it has really moved over into the federal market. At a really high level, the technology scrapes all kinds of available data, and not just Twitter and Facebook, but places like Craigslist and blogs and newspaper articles. And then we apply text analytics, which we talked about earlier, is that unstructured data, being able to filter out the signal from the noise. We talk about that from time to time. And this is a really big problem in social media, is figuring out what is the signal with all of this noise going on. And trying to find essentially a digital smoke signal or an early warning sign. We're able to do that with the text analytics and then categorize the data and surface it in a lot of different or a variety of different graphical interfaces so people can take a look at it.
And so are there social media areas that you focus in on? When I think of social media, I think companies like Google have been very successful at that. And your competitor might be Google. I mean, there are a lot of smart folks out in California there, and they got a lot of servers, and that's, you know, that's similar. I never thought about it. That's really kind of dealing with, you know, you can call it big data or clumps of information, but that's what you're dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in the federal government, we all have that little police officer badge that we want to wear because we're taxpayers too, and so it matters to us. The things that really get us going are finding the fraudsters and the bad actors, and social media can help us do that. You know, the backbone, again, is this really strong analytics, but we also take a look at things like the influence that someone has. If you have a Twitter feed and you only have 5 followers, you're going to have a little less influence than someone with 5,000 followers. And so we take a look at that, and then we score the things that they put out there and the way that they're conveying their messages. And we also translate into, actually, we take a look at 30 different languages natively. So we're able to capture the colloquialisms and the slang that people are putting out there in the native language before we do the translation for the analytics. And these are a couple of things that set us apart. But all of this just paves the road for the predictive capabilities. You know, the social data combined with the past trends and your instinct and your experience is what you need, because the social media itself, it could be just noise.
I will connect the dots here, and I think the listeners are connecting the dots here. So there are countries outside the United States that may have activities going on in social media that the federal government may have an interest in, and your software may or may not assist them in that endeavor. How's that for a discreet statement?
That was fantastic. Well, we have done some, you know, sort of experiments inside and outside of the intelligence community. you know, when they need to identify and assess societal and cultural shifts, perhaps in the Middle East, and they want to provide a holistic view of a geographic location, including the people and their sentiment related to a topic of interest. And you have to be able to surface that quickly and dynamically to your analysts that are taking a look at it, so they have actionable and real-time information on local events. We did do an experiment where we looked at triggers like general discontent and indications of protest, as well as stressor events like the price of oil going up or the shortage of water. And it did turn out, in fact, that spikes in two of those areas, general discontent along the social media data and indications of protest leading up to an election, were great indicators of a very violent election day.
In 10 days, I'll give a 40-minute lecture on analytics at Georgetown. And what I always talk about, and you just said it right there, is there's a quantitative aspect and the qualitative aspect. And the qualitative aspect subtle words, sentiments. Okay, in this culture, this word means something. In this culture, it doesn't have its impact. And I'm sure there are cultures that outside here that you could walk up to someone and do something that would just shock them, and you could do it in the United States your whole life and no one would be shocked at it. So these are qualitative parts, I think, that SAS can bring to the game.
That's exactly right. You know, it's like the throwing of the shoe and what that means in the United States and what that means in other foreign countries. And being able to assess that from the native understanding as opposed to doing an American or an English translation is critical to the success of understanding what's really going on in a given area, so that you might decide whether or when or how to intervene. For instance, I don't personally work with the Red Cross, but the Red Cross or the Agency for International Development might be looking for indicators of places where they do need to intervene, where they can give aid and go and help do some restructuring. The social media analytics can help you get ahead of that and actually predict where there might be some need.
So I keep thinking of who your competitors are, and I scratch my head and I say, well, Google must be your competitor because they're, well, it's not your competitor. So, but it seems like you partner with so many organizations like Accenture and Deloitte, HP, IBM, and IBM has products similar to yours, and it seems like you're kind of like the glue that fits all this stuff together. It seems like you work with the companies that do data collecting, you do with companies that, you know, maybe different types of assessment, and it's, I don't see where the... I don't see the obvious. Oh, our competitors A, B, and C. It's not that obvious, is it?
It certainly isn't, and that's what's daunting and exciting at the same time. We have over 200 technologies. When somebody asks me who we compete with, I say, in what area? You know, we have huge competitors in data management and data quality and accessing data, master data management. We have competitors in the enterprise reporting sector, you know, where you're surfacing the data. But the one area where, as you mentioned earlier, the analysts will indicate we own 36% of the market is in advanced analytics. The next largest market owner is at about 12%.
And that's the obvious one.
And then it's, you know, a lot of one and two and up and comers. Don't get me wrong. There are some great companies out there, but SAS, after 37 years, is market dominant and being innovative every single day with things like visual analytics that allow us to continue growing.
What about the data collection part of it? In my world, I think I said this earlier, I was at a quality summit the last 2 days in downtown D.C. within the medical world, and they talk about collecting data. And a lot of times with the medical sensors are out there, they can get the data, but they have this whole problem, they call it fat finger data, where someone types in, it's not correct, or it goes beyond a range. What's your blood pressure? 10,000 over 43. It doesn't make sense. So how do you work with that, or is that a different section altogether? How can you ensure just the data that's collected is valid?
Right. Well, we refer to that, generally speaking, as data quality. And you're exactly right that there are some areas where using data quality technology can help you find misspellings, can find typographical errors, can help you find
outliers.
Duplications.
Yeah, that's what is outliers.
And things like that, and you can help correct them. There are areas, for instance, in our intelligence community where again, they're only working with bits and pieces, and so that maybe dirty data is dirty data today, but it might not be tomorrow. And so it might be a clue to something you're not actually looking for today, but it might be useful tomorrow. So you have to be careful where you apply data quality and data cleansing and you know, maintaining the sort of authenticity of it. But you're exactly right. Data quality is a huge market for us.
And the authenticity in the medical world is a problem with people wanting to have control of their medical records.
Yes.
And then people also want to be able to input information in the medical records. And then someone like you would say, well, how does that impact the validity of that sample, John? Well, I never thought of that. Well, they're thinking about it because we can do all the analytics in the world, but if you have, you know, information isn't correct, it's not going to have any validity.
Well, that's exactly right. It's just, you know, what your dad always taught you. It's garbage in, garbage out. So if you put data, dirty data in into an analytics algorithm, you're not going to get a result that you're looking for. So again, it depends on the type of data that you're looking at and what you want to get out of it. And preserving the authenticity is important, but cleaning it so that you can look at it clearly is also critical.
I showed my cards. I go to a lot of events and I talk to people. It's always much better. For example, I was sitting next to a medical doctor at an event and someone was lecturing and the doctor was translating for me. Oh, I get it. No, that's really, and it's specialized terms. And you folks have a government leadership summit. Is that once a year? How often is that?
We do. We have it once a year. We're actually not going to have it in 2014 because we're having our enormous global users conference at National Harbor at the Gaylord in 2014. So we'll skip our government leadership forum. But we do have an exciting event every year where we have government leaders come in and talk about their applications, and we speak about the innovations that we're working on at SAS.
It's going to be the international event's going to be right in our backyard.
That's
so
right.
I think if you're listening to this, you should go to SAS.com and get in somehow by hook or by crook, you know?
That's right.
And this is so much more valid, I found. If you can sit with a human being and pull them aside and go, okay, now, what do they mean by that? And then all of a sudden it clears things up and you can go to the next workshop and have a completely different topic. But face-to-face, I think, is just an improvement over email, digital, TV, anything.
Oh, so true. And face-to-face and hearing about it from somebody's face is critical, but seeing it too is different. So again, I'm talking about visual analytics a few times, but the ability to actually see the stuff in action is huge. And we'll be doing a lot of that at this conference in the spring. You mentioned the doctor you were sitting next to. SAS has a chief medical officer. And in part because we have a very strong healthcare benefit and capability inside the company, but also that helps us in our healthcare and life sciences.
Largest private software company is one of the biggest ones out there. And innovation in terms of healthcare, and that's probably a case study in and of itself, just how they work with that and work with their employees. It's a great story. Let's take a break. Come back, talk more about predictive analytics. And speaking of prediction, we're going to hand Karen a crystal ball, and she's going to have to make some predictions about the future of predictive analytics for the federal government. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio of Karen Terrell, Vice President of Federal with SAS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Karen Terrell, Vice President of SAS Federal. And we're talking about predictive analytics and data collection, and we talked about social media. So now I have to ask you about social media and SAS's presence. I imagine there's blogs at your site and there's a Twitter feed. Do you remember what those are?
Well, the Twitter feed is at SAS Analytics,
okay.
And www.sas.com is a great place to go for all kinds of information about SAS.
Yeah, I was reading a blog there this morning.
Yep.
Very understated. It's almost like a 6'6" football player just standing there. I mean, it's very understated. All the different areas you work in, and the blogs aren't superficial blogs. I like raisins. I mean, these are very serious
yes.
blogs written by serious people about, I think, serious topics. And I think
yeah.
that's, we can talk about social media and ha ha ha, Twitter feed, go RG3 and all that stuff. But in the real world, there are organizations that have to know what's going on in social media in other countries because bad things can happen. And that's all I'm going to say because I'm not going to get arrested.
Good.
My wife and I bought a rug last week. And it was a wool rug. And the first thing she said, John, you have to vacuum it. And I said, why do you vacuum? You always vacuum a brand new wool rug. So I vacuumed it and almost filled up the little tank of the vacuum cleaner with junk, with dirt. And so I'm thinking about all these mobile devices that are out there and these data collection points and social media and feeds and saying, well, you got this big vacuum cleaner and you're soaking up all this. Now what?
Yeah.
Well, that's the question you're going to answer. So you can go up to an agency and go, well, wonderful. You have all this weather information. You have all this social media information. Well, now what? How do you make sense of it? I mean, you know, you can have a full vacuum. It doesn't make sense. You can't, you got to empty it and start all over again. So vacuuming that data That, I mean, that's another one. You just have a vacuum cleaner at your website. Hey, you got all this data? We'll help you with it.
Yeah, and it's not a vacuum of data. It's a vacuum full of data. There's,
yeah, that's right. Yeah,
there's so much of it. And of course, you know, the federal government, it's, like I said earlier, big data is really not new to the federal government in terms of its girth, but its growth is exponential. And the predictions that you're hearing out there are astounding, that the unstructured data is growing at a percentage of that 90% of the data in the world be unstructured in the next 2 years or so, and being able to access it for the mission of the federal government to really separate that signal from the noise, to figure out, again, how you can answer the questions that Congress needs answered, how you can answer better to your constituents, the citizens of this country, about the services that you're providing. And being able to get to that data is critical in being able to do that.
Well, every guest in this show has to answer 10 questions about their nerdiness, and so we're going to give you a scientific 10-question survey, and then we'll make a scientific conclusion if you are a card-carrying nerd or not. So you ready for this one, Karen?
Well, no. I mean, I'd be happy to tell you, give it up, that I work with really smart people, but I'm not necessarily one of them.
Well, we'll just find out. People listening, I wonder if she's really a nerd or not. We'll find out. So if I walked into your house today, would I see any desktop computers floating around there?
No.
That's a good sign. That's a good sign. And when did you get your first cell phone? What year? You remember?
I don't. I would estimate it was around 92.
What's that? That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
And do you have your own personal Twitter feed?
I do not.
Do you have your own personal blog?
I do not.
You're sinking fast in the nerdmobile here, aren't you? And do you use any personal online backup services?
Carbonite.
And what kind of smartphone do you have?
An iPhone.
Mm-hmm. And in a typical month, how many apps do you use on that little iPhone?
Probably 25 or 30.
Oh, you're doing pretty good here now. So we show up at your house in an hour. We find how many tablet devices. I used to ask if you have any. Now, how many do you have floating around your house?
Three.
Three. And last question. Two more questions. Social networking sites you participate in?
LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Facebook for fun.
And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Oh, electronic.
Electronic. Oh, you're surging at the end there.
That one's easy.
I think you're going to come high on the nerd scale here. I'll have to run through my UNIVAC computer in my basement and print it on green bar, send it to the folks in Cary, North Carolina to interpret it.
Because they can.
I can't interpret. Oh, they will. They'll interpret everything. I'll tell you that. The interpreting
right.
is being way too silly as well. Let's go from silly to the future.
Yeah.
You know, I made these statements about, you know, mobile devices in the future and data points and the federal government. It's awful hard to predict what's going on. Where do you see the trends in the next 5 to 7 years? I guess if we attend the conference coming up in the spring, what's it called again?
That's right, the SAS Global Forum.
There'd be a lot of people there with opinions about that. They would opine about that. So what do you think? I mean, you know, you seem like a practical person. You've been involved in the federal government. You can see what's going on. Where do you see this all heading?
Well, I don't see data going away. I agree with all the predictions that the amount of data, the velocity, the veracity of it is going to continue to increase exponentially. What I do see, as we're seeing today with some of the SaaS technologies like visual analytics, is the ability for a normal person, not a quant, not a statistician, to be able to not only access the data but actually use it for whatever purpose they need, whether it's retail or healthcare or in the federal government to increase the services to the government. It's the real ability of the knowledge worker to use the data. So it used to be that you have to send your requests over to IT and you had to ask the statisticians to help you understand the data and look at it in different perspectives. And today, you really can just drill down with your own mouse and take a look at the graphical interfaces to understand the data so that you can make better decisions and use the historical data and the past trends to find those anomalies and those clusters, the outliers you mentioned earlier, so that you can figure out the best course of action going forward. It's not a crystal ball, though, John.
Yeah. What's interesting about social media is we talked about your company's ability to look at social media and analyze it, wide variety of platforms, wide variety of languages. But, you know, let's put it in working boots. If I went down to Cary, North Carolina, and someone wanted to share information, they not only wanted it quickly, but they would want to share it fast as well. And so this information today, it has to be current, and it has to be visual, and it has to be easy to share. And that's the checklist, I think, today. I think that's a checklist going to be more and more important in the future.
That's right. It has to be easy to use and easy to look at. You know, I mean, with the graphical interfaces that we're used to dealing with today from Apple and all the other sources out there, the technology needs to follow suit. And it does. And it's a really exciting time to be in the analytics world because you've got the real power. Our tagline is the power to know. And it's the ability to actually know what's going on with your data, but in a fun, graphical way.
Early in the interview, we talked about trends and big data. And the trend, obviously, is a cloud. I mean, we know that. Does that have any implication on your business at all? Does that just a speed bump for you? Or does that have any implication for you?
Oh, it's not a speed bump. It's a tremendous opportunity. We're really excited about it. Our technology is being used in the cloud with a lot of our federal government customers already, sometimes in private and sometimes in public clouds, depending on the mission. We have our own cloud down in Cary, but we partner with some other organizations out here for the federal compliance issues. And we're excited about being able to service our customers that way. It's definitely not a speed bump.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know how it impacted you or didn't impact.
That's great.
Everyone seems to have a different way to understand this. When we look at the data coming in and trying to analyze it, what kind of topics do you think would bring up with that? I imagine this global forum, it was pushed through by your user group, because that's what's interesting about you. There's a very powerful user group, you know, maybe equal to the whole company itself, that's promoting a lot of these ideas, aren't they?
Well, they sure are. Our users group is many thousands strong, and they actually run this conference we've been talking about. And SAS is a sponsor of the conference of
is
our
there a
users.
Federal user group too?
And there is a federal users group. In fact, I think they met in our Roslyn office earlier this week when I was out of town. So there is, and it's a very active community.
Now, that would be of value to my listeners. I mean, if they're in a problem and they're beating their head against the wall and they figure, I'm the only human on the planet that ever had this problem, they show up at a user group, they find out, no, everyone's had this problem and here's the solution. That's the wonderful part of user groups, because they're shared experiences, shared frustrations.
That's right. I mean, insofar as the federal government has a lot of unique challenges with the different missions that they have to do, they are also never alone. So there are lots of people who have experienced the same challenges and the different speed bumps in trying to access the data and use it for their mission, and lots of people that they can turn to and talk to about it.
And these people have certifications for using your software, is that right?
Absolutely.
So they're certified user software, and still they realize that there's strength in numbers and common frustration. I imagine there's social media shares and different ways to communicate. How would you find this group if you're listening to this radio show when there's snow on the ground? How would you find the local user group?
You can go to SAS.com and you can search for users groups.
That's great. So we have a big summit coming up. We've got user groups. It seems like a huge, huge, big growing tree from a little acorn back 30 years ago, wasn't it? These were a couple of statistics professors who were challenged with analyzing agricultural data, and they got a little money from USDA, then they got a little money from NIH, and it's blossomed into this. I mean, it's pretty hard to predict that from back in. I'm sure they didn't predict that in 75, did they?
I don't think so, but you know, Dr. Goodnight is an extraordinary visionary, and he is the leader of the company. He's hands-on every day. Got to see him yesterday when I was down in headquarters, and I don't know that he imagined this. I think he has a wonderful imagination, though, and has created something out of, as you said, the need to analyze agricultural data. And North Carolina State University was a leader in the computer systems and the hardware that they had, and so they led this consortium and built this statistical analytical systems that turned out to not just be the name of the technology in the beginning, but also it was the company's founding.
And now the institute.
Founding.
Well, great. We'll have to revisit this maybe back 6 months and talk about the conference, maybe either immediately before the conference or do a wrap-up after the conference, talk about what's going on, because it's going to impact just about every agency out there. And if it's in so many Fortune 500 companies, it's got to be in most federal agencies as well.
It is.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Karen Terrell, Vice President of Federal with SAS. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com.